This is the Alpaca Podcast for all things alpaca. If you're an owner, a soon-to-be owner, a want-to-be owner, or are just alpaca mad or love the fleece, welcome to the Alpaca Tribe. I'm Steve Hetherington. Hi, Steve here, and welcome to the podcast for alpaca people. So good to see you again. And here we are. I came across something the other day, which was a tip for coping with overwhelm. Knowing what to ignore. Oh, isn't that a gem? Knowing what to ignore. In context, it was somebody asking a librarian for help with research into a particular area she was, as a student, exploring. And the librarian was able to go, you want this, 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 and just able to pull the things together so quickly and make some recommendations that the person who was doing the research hadn't even thought of. How did you do that? And the answer was, knowing what to ignore. Oh, that's such a good gem. It applies in so many different places. It will work for you and me generally in life, but it will also work for you and me as alpaca owners. Knowing what to ignore. We get surrounded with so many things. We get so much data that comes into us, and it's just really helpful to know which things you could safely ignore. I got some new glasses. That was something I was ignoring. It was on the back burner for too long, and I was having to tip my head further and further back. You know, when you're reading things, when you've got varifocals, which these are, then long distances at the top and short distance of the close-up stuff is at the bottom of the lens. And I was having to tip my head further and further back to try and read things. Do you know, I got my new glasses. They weren't dramatically different in a sense, but as soon as I started doing familiar things like reading things on my phone, I said, oh, I can see the little words without having to tip my head back. I thought they were going to stay clean. No, it's new glasses. Nope, don't stay clean. They're not stay clean glasses. And it's a whole variety of stuff, but you know, forgetting any spitting or anything coming my direction, but just the general dust and stuff. The dried peas, flaked, micronized peas, actually have quite a lot of dust associated with them. So there was this problem of I would stir the food in and add the extra peas, stir it all in, and then my glass, I go, oh, when the sun catches them and shines on them, I go, not as sharp as they were. They're just a little bit dusty, a little bit dirty. So we also got a spray. A spray for cleaning your glasses. It's good, but it's not going to work miracles. You've got to clean your glasses, keep them clean as much as you can. So I was doing that, and then I started doing a bit of strimming. Yeah. Oh, not a good idea. Right. Back up to the house. I suddenly thought, this is not what I should be doing with my new glasses. So I switched back to my old ones. They're very similar, actually, but you probably wouldn't notice the difference. There's a subtle difference in the color and the shape slightly, but essentially they're the same. Stick with what you know. Stick with what works. And yeah, so I changed back to my old ones for the strimming. That was fine. I could see enough very clearly. And all the bits from the strimming, even with the helmet and the visor thing, I was still getting some stuff drifting through to the glass. I thought, oh, do you know, this 2 days in, no, it's not a good idea to be wearing new glasses when you're strimming. So I changed those over to the old ones. But new glasses, yeah, it makes a good difference. I was kind of ignoring doing something about it, and then I did, and it was worth doing something about. So there we are. I've been finding myself waking up recently at various times, sometimes in the dead of night, sometimes like yesterday. Was it only yesterday? They all blur together, don't they? I think it was only yesterday. I'm hearing the sound of a fight. The boys are fighting. Oh, I'm wide awake. No, I'm not. I'm fighting to wake up, grab the clothes, get dressed. Oh, no, I'm going to have to take my new glasses off and splash water in my face. Kept myself awake here, and then caught myself. Oh, I need my boots. And I'll go out this door because it's going to be quieter. And got out the door, got out there, got to the top of the drive by the house, ready to. It's a bit of a walk down and cross and up. It had all gone quiet. The boys had stopped fighting. So I got out of bed and was thinking, and I think it was poor old Fred, who's the one who's nearly blind, was getting picked on a bit. He does anyway, but occasionally there's a bit of a thing. And it's usually the usual suspects. Olaf was in the midst of all of this. And when Sue fed them that morning, there was... do you know what I'm talking about? It's yesterday. It is all blurring. It was actually today. That's why I'm tired. Yeah, so Sue went over and there was a green spit around and on Olaf's back and a little bit on Fred's, but essentially Fred's, even for his lack of vision, still holds his own. He still has the heart of a bruiser. He was a bit of a boy before he lost the sight in one eye, and he's now pretty much losing the sight in the other. He was a bit vacant. That was more yesterday. Yeah, just kind of standing, waiting for input. Couldn't really see what was going on. He was a little bit detached, but he was better this morning. I was good. Yeah. This is something we've been kind of expecting, this fighting, this sorting out territory again. We lost Howell last week. It started previous weekend, but he was at office food. He wasn't quite right. We did all the things. We checked all the things. We tried this and that, and he just wasn't quite, and he didn't pick up, and he started spiraling. We had the vet out. We did all the stuff, but there was a limit to what we could find, and then the point two, and then his temperature started going down. And other stuff. It just could see that he was starting to shut down. So then we made the difficult decision, as it always is, to have the vet back. That's a hard choice, but sometimes it's the right one, and on this occasion we think it was. It's a bit of a mystery, never quite really got to the bottom of it, but he was 15 years old. It's not old for an alpaca, but it's a good age, and he'd done well. And yeah, he was a character. He was the one who used to hang over the fence, always talking to the girls, and he would track them if they were moving down the valley. He would follow them down on his side of the fence, thankfully. But he would be at the lower point to between his girls and the rest of the boys. But he was a bit of a loner, a bit of a happy to be by himself kind of alpaca. I know that's not normal, but it was for him. And he preferred that. I mean, that was his one reason for existence, was his girls. Since we stopped doing the breeding program, as all the animals are getting older and we're getting older, then, in the end, we felt it was the right thing. They're difficult sometimes to work out exactly what's going on. Is there something that you can recover to get back to? On this occasion, we lost him. So that was a shame. But that was therefore going to change the dynamic, which it has. They were very subdued for quite a number of days, almost a week after the loss. They were around. They saw him. And they checked him. They came and had a sniff and stuff. So I think that's often a good thing where it's possible to allow them to say goodbye, to have that connection and to recognize that he's gone. We didn't used to do that, but we found it's much, much more settling generally for the group. They still know, they still miss, they still grieve. We applied those kind of human terms. I'm not sure what other terms you would use, but there is a recognition of a loss and of a miss. So they were subdued for a number of days, and the quieter. There's a bit more space as they're feeding. There's not the competition in the same way there was. Howell was the top male, and therefore there was a little bit of tension sometimes. And over the recent months, but particularly the last couple of weeks, that had started to change. He would come inside more. He would take himself off more down the far end into the stable at the far end, and you'd feed the rest, but he wasn't around. Check on him, and he was down the far end in the other field shelter right at the end of the valley. Sometimes the girls were down there, but not always. So there's this kind of data you're starting to be aware of, and the question of, what do you ignore? Can I ignore this? Sometimes there's nothing to do immediately, but you don't ignore that. You don't ignore those things, but you do take them in and hold them. And he was on a watch list in my head. I was keeping an eye on him. And it wasn't a complete surprise when he dipped down. It was more of a surprise when he kept going down. I thought it was just a digestive thing that would have cleared and gone back to normal. But no, not on this occasion. It's a funny dynamic equilibrium. There's a balance. There's a thing. But it's dynamic. It's shifting and moving and changing. And that's true of the individual animals and how they are. As I said, Fred's was a little bit adrift. A little bit disorientated. He's doing really well and has done really well. But he's struggling as well. I recognize that. And there are other animals that are kind of on the watch list in my head, just checking how they're doing, where they are. They get squeezed out a bit. So there's a bit more space. The feeding has gone quietly and generally without incident. We were expecting at some point there would be a little bit of adjustment in terms of the dynamic of the group. So it's one less, but it's also Olaf, who was the pretender to the throne of being top male. He probably, he's still got a bit of competition from Jack, who's the one who talks a lot and the one who competes for the food, certainly does. So there's a bit of that going on, but he's not an enforcer. He's not he doesn't get in your face in the same way as Olaf does, not personally to me or to Sue, but he's much more challenging of some of the other alpacas, and he reads their body language and he kind of pushes it. He provokes things a bit. So that's an interesting kind of... So he was fighting with this morning, first thing, early hours, at 5:30, I think, was fighting with Fred's. I'm hoping this is just a little bit of adjustment and it's not going to become a regular thing. We don't want Fred's getting bullied or any of the others. So we're going to have to work out how we manage that one through. But yeah, so that dynamic equilibrium between the animals, the individuals, yes, and they're in equilibrium, which is a dynamic equilibrium, but also the dynamic of the group. There's an equilibrium, there's a balance there, there's an up and down, there's a shuffle going on, and there's a bit of adjustment going on. But that dynamic equilibrium is something that you certainly recognize. Knowing what to ignore. There's some things you shouldn't be ignoring, some things you hold, and other things you can hold further back. They're not significant, probably. I'm aware that sometimes there's a movement that goes on and they kind of move from the stable, thinking of the girls now, and they move from the stable and they'll move out and they'll go round, go up into the field. Sometimes they'll go down to the garden paddock. Sometimes they'll go over into the car park or the goose yard. And that's an interesting one, because what's going on there? So who started this? Who was the one who started the drift? It's very difficult to tell. You have to spend some time around the alpacas. And that's one of those things that you'll only learn those kind of things by spending time with them, a longer time. A good excuse for sitting in the field, etc. But spending time watching, just observing whatever's going on, just to observe the little dynamics that are going on between the individuals and which one moves first and how they follow. So it's not always the same. And it's just, yeah. So that's an interesting, what should we call it? Let's call it field work rather than homework. A little bit of field work for you to spend some time with your alpacas and just watch the movement? Who sets off first? Who starts the drift as they move from one place to another for grazing or whatever? And it's probably going to vary, but I'll leave that for you. That's some field work for you to do. And each time you do that, it adds more data to your pattern recognition machine. You've got in your brain, you've got a pattern recognition machine, and that data goes in it, and it will allow you to go, oh, this is normal, I can ignore, or this is something I should be paying attention to, or just one of those, well, that's interesting. That's interesting. I wonder what that means. File it away, hold it, and see. But your pattern recognition machine needs feeding with regular extra data. So spend some time with the alpacas if you can. I like you to do that anyway. So that's the way forward, is to keep feeding the data into your pattern recognition machine, knowing what to ignore. So, valley update. Yeah. So, View from the Valley is me on Substack. So this is some of the other stuff around the valley, the place, the activities going on there, the birds, the bees, the insects, the vegetation, just the things that I'm noticing, perspectives that come from living in a valley. And so there's some stuff over there, some writing, which is slightly different. And there's some audio. I'm recording that as well, but it's not quite the same as this. Certainly not the same as this. It's not focused on the alpacas as much. And I'm just bringing it to your attention, should it be of interest. So Valley Update, View from the Valley, find over on Substack. And there'll be a link in the episode notes. The other thing that happened was that we had a wake in the night moment, which wasn't to do with the alpacas. And I could hear fox cries and all the rest of it. And it was the number of fox cries. So a number of foxes involved. And I was thinking, could be just that, you know, what the noise they make for the matings and stuff, and they're chasing each other around. But it didn't sound, didn't sound quite right. It wasn't just that. And it turned out it was something else. And in the morning, opened the curtains and discovered, I thought, that's interesting. They're all over in a slightly different place in the goose yard. All the geese and the swans are over in a different place. And later when I came out and fed the alpacas and then wandered around and I spent some time and moved over. Yeah, okay, the geese moved off. They got on the lake, and I just had a sense there wasn't quite enough of them. I was missing one of the numbers. And so I counted them and watched and all the rest of it. And do you remember I talked about this goose that was the extra egg, the mum that went back and sat on the nest again, and there was another egg that hatched. So she had three, and then she added this other one in. But it wasn't quite developing. It was slower. It was, feathers weren't quite as good. It was droopy wings, and it's walking. Its legs didn't seem so good anyway. Unfortunately, we had visits by foxes in the night, and it was a group of them. And they took that young one. They took the one that was underdeveloped. I was getting worried about how she was going to leave the valley. So I don't think she was going to be able to fly. She was behind, quite a bit behind the others. And that was a bit of concern. So they took her in the night. And they also attacked the female swan. So she was also not in quite as good condition. And her feathers on the ends of her wings were not as developed. She was going through a molt. And anyway, a group of them, but they made a real mess attacking her and damaging her back, injuring her back. So she was stationary. She was in the car park. She was okay, but seriously injured. Oh, goodness, what do you do? What do you do? So sort of doing the research, working out, because it was beyond anything I could help with, anything I could do. The male stayed around. He moved off onto the lake and came back and was sat near her quite a bit of the morning. I managed to find who I needed to speak to eventually. They were very good in coming back to me. So there was a swan rescue organization, and they sent somebody out. But by the time they'd made the connection and then got the person who had to travel to get to us, by the time they arrived, unfortunately, she died. Yeah. So that was a surprise. That was a shock. And the male stayed near and then went off. He stayed, in fact. He's still around and cruising around with the ducks. The geese were around for a bit longer, but they did a lot of flying practice. Two family groups of geese. They did a lot of flying practice. Video on the episode notes for you to have a check at. And yeah, so it's really funny because I was on the call with my friends in America who we talk podcasting. We go back. We've been having weekly calls for years now. And I saw the geese flying and they landed on at the end of it. Oh, no, I thought they were leaving. No, they've just landed. And sometime during the rest of the call, they did leave. And Sue heard them leave, but we didn't manage to capture the moment. Sometimes we do. Sometimes there's a clear thing that goes on. And yeah. So they've left. So the two, both groups of five, so the two adults and three. Are they still goslings? Anyway, they're youngsters that are really quite grown up now. Difficult to tell apart. But they've flown off and they usually come back at some point. They haven't been back yet. But the swan is here with the ducks that are still around. More hens and also the little grebes still around. So it's interesting. So that's quite a change. Kind of expecting they were doing some practice flying and stuff, but it was, yeah, they've gone. Change. So which things do you ignore? That's something that is a moving target. It's a thing that keeps us on our toes, observing all these things and then working out what we do with them and which things to ignore. So there we are. Sad on numbers of fronts there. But generally, the valley is doing well, is green, not as hot and hot that it was. Ooh, I'm so pleased about that. So if you can, because an opportunity to get out and can get out and spend some time with your alpacas, do that. Do some watching, do some noticing. See who, remember that fieldwork exercise I've given you? Go off and see who's leading the drift when they move from one place to another. Just checking out and adding that data into your pattern recognition machine. Yeah. So there you go. If you can, go spend some time with your alpacas. Take care. Have a good week. And I'll catch you again soon. Bye for now.
This is the Alpaca Tribe. And I'm Steve Hetherington. Have a great day.